ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Krishna. Thank you for attending the temple program this afternoon. My name is Ramai Swami. And this afternoon I'd like to read a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Actually, it's the last verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Pato Danudara Tatra Sri Vijayobhuti Dhruva Niti Mati Mama. Translation: wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. Purport: Bhagavad Gita began with the inquiry of Dhritarashtras. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons, assisted by great warriors like Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side. But after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjaya told the king, "You are thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where Krishna and Arjuna are present, there will be all good fortune." This very last instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, spoken not by Krishna directly, but by Sanjaya, and he's addressing King Dhritarashtra. The battle was going on at Kurukshetra, some 100 miles away, but Sanjaya was empowered by his guru, Vyasadeva, to be able to see all things there, to understand the discussions, everything that was going on. he knew. And he was relating everything to Dhritarashtra. here the last comment by Sanjaya: wherever there is Krishna, and Krishna is addressed here as Yogeshwara. Yogeshwara means the master of all yoga, or the master of all mysticism. This is Krishna. So, we know that Krishna's position, Bhagawan Sri Krishna. And Krishna, when he came to the world, he has come many times in different forms. He came 5,000 years ago and he did many wondrous things, displayed many mystical powers. For example, when Jarasandha was attacking Mathura, he attacked for the... He attacked 17 times already and he was defeated, and he was coming for the 18th time. Simultaneously, there was one king from the south, Kalayavana, was attacking also. So Krishna thought that this was too much for the citizens of Mathura, Jarasandha coming, Kalayavana coming. So he decided to build a great city in the ocean, and that is the city of Dwarka. Some of you may have been to Dwarka. Anyone from Gujarat here? I was in Dwarka just recently. so he built that on an island in the ocean. And the citizens, when they slept overnight, were transported by Krishna's mystical power while they slept from Mathura, many thousands of miles away, to Dwarka. And when they woke in the morning, they were sleeping in other beds in their different houses or palaces in a far distant place. As they were sleeping, they were mystically transported in that way. So this is just one example of Krishna's great mystic power. We know that as a small child he lifted the Govardhan Hill and many other examples of his great extraordinary mystical power. So he's addressed here as Yogeshwara. Certainly not only mysticism, but all yoga, all the power of yoga originates in Krishna. So Yogeshwara. And Arjuna is addressed here as Danuda. Danuda means Danu means the bow. Danudara. He is famous as a archer, great warrior, especially archery. You know, there was one story of Arjuna and all the Pandavas, all the princes in Hastinapur were being taught by their guru Dronacharya. And one time Dronacharya made a competition. Who was the best archer? And he made a wooden bird. And he put the wooden bird high in a tree. And their contest was who could come forward and with a bow arrow and hit the bird high in the tree. So he called Yudhisthira and, yes, take the bow, take the arrow, aim. Do you see the bird? Yes. Do you see the tree? Yes. Do you see us? Yes. Dronacharya said, no good. Put down the bow arrow, go away. Bhimsena, come on. Pick up the bow, take aim. Do you see the bird? Do you see the tree? Yes, yes. Do you see it? Yes, no good. Arjuna, pick up the bow, take aim. Do you see us? No, I don't see. Do you see the tree? No, I don't see the tree. Do you see the branches of the tree? No. Do you see the bird? No, I don't see the bird. Then what do you see? I only see the eye of the bird. Oh, you are the archer. Fire your arrow. Fire the arrow went directly in the eye of the bird. There was another instance, of course, in the Swayamvara of Draupadi where Arjuna had to pierce. He came disguised as a Brahmin. Had to pierce the fish target. It was the contest for the hand of Draupadi. Was that the father, the king, had made a very difficult contest. So he had one fish. And there was some sort of wheel rotating under the fish with spokes. And you had to, but not look directly, you had to look in a body of a little small pond of water and see the reflection like that. And then look down and then fire your arrow like that and go through the spokes that were on the turning wheel and pierce the eye of the fish. So no one could do it. But Arjuna looked down, he did it, and he straight in the eye. So this is Arjuna, great Danuda. And because Prabhupada would instruct us that we have to be like that in Krishna consciousness. Arjuna wasn't diverted, thinking, seeing other things. He was as fixed on the target. So we have to be fixed in Krishna consciousness the same way. That's just a point I remember of Prabhupada instructing, is using that story. Anyway, so here, words are used. Yogeshwara, Danuda, and then Tatra Sri Vijayo Bhuti Dhruvaniti Mati Mama. That wherever there is Krishna, there will be an Arjuna. In other words, wherever there is God, wherever there is a devotee, there will be these things. At that time there was Krishna and Arjuna, but you could say that where there is God, where there were the devotees of God, and so here we have Rukmini Dwarkadish and Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Devi Gaunitai, and you are all devotees. So certainly be some measure of these things. There'll be opulence. Now there's different types of opulence. Aishwara. Aishwara means the wealth or opulence. Now generally for a materialist, people go mad after money. That is one of the prime goals of life, is to make money. So that's one level of opulence. And this is said, Janmaishwarya, Ashruta, Shiva. There are four main things that is said that people of the world, they go, they're very desirous of. One of those things is the Aisha, opulence or money, wealth. So one level is you get money or you get possessions and so on and so forth. But there's another level of opulence, that's spiritual opulence. When you're with God, when you're with Krishna. When someone is with Krishna, that person has everything. It's inconsequential whether they have money or they don't have money of the world. It's inconsequential. Just like the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were living in Vrindavan under different trees every night, just wearing a loincloth. So externally, they appeared very poor. But do you think the six Goswamis were actually, you could categorize them as poor people? You think Sanat Goswami, he was a poor man. No. Rupa Goswami, he's like a poor man. No. Why weren't they poor? They had Krishna. So if when you have Krishna, you have everything. Krishna can give you everything. Or you can be satisfied with nothing of the world. Still you're happy. And you're happy wherever you are. You don't need so many external things to make you happy. I was with Prabhupada one time, and one reporter asked Prabhupada, "Your divine grace, how do you like it in this country?" And Prabhupada said, "I like it everywhere." In other words, what was the difference, one country? We make a distinction. I like it here better. I don't like it there so much. And this place is better. He's better. She's better. These are all dualities of the world. So for Prabhupada, because he was in Krishna consciousness, it didn't matter one country or another country or somebody. So when you're with Krishna, that's the highest opulence when you have Krishna. There's one saying, with your two hands, if Krishna wants to give you everything, how can you hold it? And with your two hands, if Krishna wants to take it away, how can you stop him? Different levels of opulence, material, spiritual, and here, tatrasi vijaya, vijaya, jaya, or vijaya, means victory, or success. So, we know in the world there's people that they're desirous of success at work, in business, or at school, in sport, in so many different ways, people want to be victorious and successful. That's one level. But that's temporary. You're victorious 1 week or 1 month, and then the fortunes can reverse. You can be defeated quite easily. But there's another level of victory, which is higher, transcendental level. And that level is spiritual victory. If you can come to that position, that is real victory. That means that you've overcome desire for sense enjoyment in the world, and you're fixed in Krishna consciousness. You're aloof from all the allurements and attachments of the world. So that is a real victory. Someone can attain that. If you can rise above your material body, you rise above your material mind. This was instruction given to Yudhisthira. After the battle of Kurukshetra, King Yudhisthira became very morose, feeling himself responsible for the massacre of so many soldiers and so on. So it is said, one description is that when he came to Hastinapura, he didn't want to be the emperor. After all that, he told his Bhimsena and Arjuna and everyone, "I don't want to be the emperor. Let Bhimsena be the emperor. I don't want to be. Bhima can do it." And everyone was talking to him, and Krishna was talking to him. Finally, he went to Bhishma Dev, who spoke to him. And one of the instructions was, "You're being affected by your mind." That is one battle that if you don't win, you'll be forced to come back life after life to fight it again and again and again. When you're victorious against your mind, then you've reached the transcendental platform. So that is a great victory, not so easily attainable in the world. That is the greatest victory. That is a transcendental victory. Extraordinary power. We know people are strong or influential in the world. But that's just like a big fish in a small pond. You may have power here in Los Angeles or in New York or in London or in Paris or globally speaking, you may have influence and power. But in the grand scheme of things, within the universe and beyond the universe, our power is, insignificant, actually. And is temporary. That is not real power. Real power is when you realize yourself as servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of all power. When you're 10% connected with Krishna, you are supremely powerful. And you can do all things. We saw that with Srila Prabhupada, how he was empowered to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world and have so many people take up the path of Krishna consciousness. The last thing mentioned here is morality. Now, morality, that is relative. Mundane morality. What is moral here may not be moral in another country. For example, we were just in Amsterdam, and they're selling marijuana right from shops. Legal, moral. But over here, it's illegal. In some countries, like, I travel through Singapore, Malaysia, you'll get the death penalty. So where is the standard? In some countries, you'll get the death penalty. Other countries, you can sell it legally. Other countries, illegal. So it's all subjective, relative. So where is the morality? It's just, someone's opinion or a group of people's opinion, so on and so forth. But real morality is in Krishna. If one is a follower of Krishna and following Krishna on the transcendental platform, true to himself, true to Krishna, that is the real moral position. So, now here, this is Sanjaya saying, wherever there's Krishna, wherever there is Arjuna, there are all these things. But, of course, he was talking very specifically also about the Battle of Kurukshetra. Even though Duryodhana had amassed far greater, almost double the amount of soldiers as the Pandavas. I think it was like 11 Akshahinis to the Pandavas, 7 or something like that. Many millions of soldiers more. There's one story where Duryodhana had gone to see Krishna to ask Krishna's help in the Battle of Kurukshetra. Arjuna also went. Simultaneously, Duryodhana arrived first. And at that time, the servant of Krishna said that, the Lord is resting. That if you just want to wait in his room, and then when he awakes, then he will speak to you. And then, so Duryodhana went in and he found a seat at the head of Krishna and he sat there waiting. And Arjuna just came just after, and he was told the same thing, if you want to go in there and just wait. So Arjuna went at the feet of Krishna and waited. So when Krishna awoke, he saw Arjuna first, and then he saw Duryodhana, and he welcomed them both. And he said that, what can I do for you? If you've come here to ask my help in the battle at the war at Kurukshetra, then I say that I will not fight. But my army, I have an army, they will fight. So you have to choose either myself or my army. So I want to ask Arjuna first. And Duryodhana objected, no, I was here first. You have to ask me first. And Krishna said, yes, you were here first, but when I awoke, I saw Arjuna first. So I have to ask him. So, of course, Arjuna being a great devotee of Krishna, a friend and devotee of Krishna, he said, my Lord, if you are just with me, then I am happy. I don't care for your army or anything. And Duryodhana, he was beside himself with joy. And he was thinking, this Arjuna is such a fool. Yeah. He picked Krishna and he won't even fight. I've got the army. So he was very happy. So that was one story, but Duryodhana had gone around and got a lot of soldiers. But still, victory was not theirs. We know that actually Krishna had arranged everything for a purpose, and the earth was overburdened by so many military soldiers. And we know previously that the Asuras, being defeated by the Devas so many times previously, had decided to take birth in the royal dynasties on earth. And in that way, growing up, at least they could rule the earth. They were trying to conquer the heavens, and they couldn't do it. So they thought, we'll rule the earth. So they had taken birth. So Krishna had come to rectify that situation of the Asuras taking over. So it's very important to understand these verses of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada always wanted us to read Bhagavad Gita. He says, actually, transcendental knowledge requires a lot of study of books like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you read regularly, then you'll benefit so much. There's one story from the Gita Mahatmya, from the Padma Purana, of the benefits of reading the Bhagavad Gita. At that time, the Lord was in the Vaikuntha, and Lakshmi Devi came to him, and she said, "Oh, you've just awoken from resting." And he said, "No, I've just been thinking about the world and how to benefit the world." And Lakshmi Devi said that, "How is that, my lord?" "I've been thinking about my energies, how they work, the prakriti and all the jivas and all the different opulences. And I am there in the form of my instructions in Bhagavad Gita." And then the Lord began to tell a story of, he said there was one brahmana by the name of Sushama. But he wasn't really a brahmana. He didn't practice any brahminical activities. And he was very addicted to eating meat, drinking a lot, and just trying to make money, although he was very poor. Actually, he used to make a living out of going to the forest and collecting leaves and making different things out of leaves and selling them in the market. And with that money, he'd just buy more wine, eat more meat. And he wasn't doing anything religious or spiritual. So one time he went out to the forest, and as he was reaching into some leaves, a snake came out and bit him, and he died from the bite of the poisonous snake. So in his next life, he came back as a bull. And he was owned by a crippled man. So this crippled man used to, because he was crippled, he used to use him for everything. And for his livelihood and just to go here and there. And he used to load him up like anything, make him work hard. And for 7-8 years, the bull, Sushama as the bull, was working very hard. And one time, the crippled man loaded him up with such a big amount of wood and rock and taking one place to the other, that the bull was struggling, and he fell unconscious. He was shaking like that, shaking. So many people, in the nearby areas saw that and were very dismayed. So they came over, "Oh, the poor bull, look at him. This man is so cruel. He's loading him. Look at that load. Now the bull's fallen over, and he's just... who knows if he's going to live." And then one man came forward and said, "If I have any sukriti, any pious credits to my name, I want to now confer those pious credits to the bull to help him. Maybe that'll help him, not he won't die." So, and then others came forward and they did the same thing. "If I have any pious credits, I want to also give to the bull, help the bull." And then one lady, she was a prostitute. She came forward and she said that, "Well, I don't know if I have any pious credits, but if I have any pious credits, I want to also give to the bull." So they were all standing around, and after a short time the bull actually died. And the soul of the bull, he went to Yamaraj. And Yamaraj is the lord of the sinful persons. All are brought to him. And the Yamaraj said, "Oh, you've been brought here, but I just want to inform you, you are free to go. All your sinful reactions have been nullified." And especially due to the pious credits of one prostitute. They've all been nullified. You'll go back now and you'll be born into a high Brahmin family. So then Sushama went back and he could remember everything. His life as a bull, before that when he was Sushama, and now as he could remember when he was what Yamaraj had told him. So he went and searched, he wanted to search out that lady. He wanted to find her and thank her. So he found her. And he, "I want to thank you for what you gave me your sukriti, and I was spared from having to be punished by Yamaraj. How is it that you got so much sukriti?" He specifically said, "You." And there were many who gave the sukriti, but Yamaraj said, "Because of your sukriti. What pious activities did you do?" She said, I haven't led that good a life, but I think I keep a parrot at home, and every day that parrot recites Bhagavad Gita." "And hearing the parrot every day, I also recite Bhagavad Gita. So I think because of that." So Sushama was very amazed. "Oh, you wanted to see that parrot and hear him recite Bhagavad Gita." So they went there, both of them, and she showed him the parrot. And Sushama began talking. "How is it this parrot knows Bhagavad Gita?" And then all of a sudden the parrot started talking to them. It was a special parrot. Well, the parrot began talking to them and said, "Formerly I was a brahmana in my last life. And I was very sinful and greedy. And I used to commit a lot of offences and insult a lot of people. And in my next life I had to be born as a parrot. And when I was a baby parrot, my parents were killed in the forest and I was just by myself and it was a very hot day. I was very afraid. There were wild animals everywhere. I could hear them screaming and crying. And I was very afraid. Luckily for me, some rishis were coming along. They saw me. They picked me up and took me to their ashram. And they placed me in a cage in one room of one of the ashrams where the children were studying Bhagavad Gita. So every day the school children would study Bhagavad Gita and I heard it and I learnt the Bhagavad Gita from their recitation of Bhagavad Gita. So after that, some thief came, stole me and sold me to this lady. And that's how I've come to be here." So Sushama, the prostitute, were amazed to hear this story. Sushama went back home and his whole life he was reading Bhagavad Gita. And that prostitute also very seriously read Bhagavad Gita. Of course, the parrot continued reciting Bhagavad Gita. All of them, at the end of their lives, went back home, back to Godhead. And Lord Vishnu, actually this story was told by Lord Shiva to Parvati, his wife, and he went on, Lord Shiva went on, and said that Lord Vishnu spoke to his wife, Lakshmi Devi, and said that if anyone reads Bhagavad Gita, or just reads one sloka of Bhagavad Gita, or just reads one line of one sloka of Bhagavad Gita, they're forever benefited, in due course of time, they'll go back home, back to Godhead. Bhagavad Gita ki jai. We can learn a lot from Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada says we have to learn a lot from Bhagavad Gita. We need a lot of knowledge to be able to go beyond the birth and death in this world and come to the transcendental position. So we have to read Bhagavad Gita. Now, Bhagavad Gita is not an ordinary book. It's not like a magazine with a lot of pictures that you can pick up and just flick through it. It takes some effort to read. It's quite philosophical. So you have to... and, of course, the best way to do it is you read at home or you can come to the temple. proper to establish these temples all over the world where we can come together, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, hear Bhagavad Gita. And when we're all together, it's quite effective in the temple in front of the deities. It's quite a very nice spiritual atmosphere. And you are able to assimilate the instruction of Bhagavad Gita in a very easy and profound way. So thank you for coming this afternoon. And I hope, I know that you must have benefited going from that story I just told. We've all benefited. I've benefited, you've benefited from hearing this verse from Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.
My Swami Ji.
Hare Krishna. Now, does anyone have a question they want to ask quickly? We're just about almost ready to start serving the feast out there. Does anyone want to ask a question at all? Yes.
How many earth years is one celestial year?
One celestial year. One day of the demigods is equal to 6 months of our time. Now, there are different degrees of celestial, because when you start going to the Janaloka, Mahaloka, and higher than the Svargaloka, they live longer still. But if you're talking Svargaloka, that is the time period. One day of theirs is 6 months of our time. And, of course, Brahmaloka, he lives for trillions of years. So one of his days, we can't even calculate how long that is in our time. Huh? Svargaloka, that is Indra, Agni, all that is that. Svarga is the heavenly sphere. There are the Svarga, and then there are higher levels again, above heaven. So there are higher levels. Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and then the Brahmaloka, where Lord Brahma lives. He lives there. And there are many residents on the Brahmaloka, and they live for millions, a fantastic amount of time. So one of their years is like, unlimited amount of years of our time. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. I think we have to end there now, everyone's going to. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
With offences.